Hey everyone, thanks for checking back in with us here at the Forum, brought to you by the Institute on Science for Global Policy. My name's Aubrey, and both Barbara and Cleo will be joining me today as we bring you our latest installment of Socializing with Science.
Talk to us directly online using your favorite form of social media. You'll find us on Twitter with the handle at ISGBForum and on Facebook by searching ISGP's The Forum. And remember to always tag your comments with hashtag ISGPForum.
We're looking forward to hearing from you.
Indeed we are. So, to kick off today's episode, I have a question for you two.
For us?
Go for it.
Okay. Have either of you ever had a foodborne illness? You know, a sickness caused by eating food that had been harboring microbes?
I have. It was horrible. I'll spare you the details, but let's just say that there is a span of 24 hours that I will never forget, and not because it was pleasant.
Did you ever figure out exactly what caused the sickness by any chance?
Well, I had a few ideas, but no, not really.
Interesting. We'll get back to that later. But how about you, Cleo? Any scuffles with our foodborne foes?
Fortunately, no. But I will say that when I first started cooking for myself, I consistently scorched the living daylights out of my chicken. Not because I didn't know how to use a stovetop, but because I was terrified of getting salmonella.
Oh, well, we'll definitely be talking a bit about salmonella today. That's because the topic of today's discussion will be preventing the spread of foodborne illness.
Maybe after this discussion, Cleo can feel comfortable enough to stop eating carbon and start eating chicken.
Hey, I happen to have become very accustomed to my carbon. I find that if you just call it blackened chicken, it's almost enjoyable.
Anyway, the paper we'll chat about today was written by Dr. Jorgen Schlundt, a director of the National Food Institute of Denmark. His paper was titled, wait for it, "The Use of Farm-to-Fork Surveillance and New Genome Sequencing Techniques to Prevent and Control Foodborne Disease Globally." Whew, breathe.
That was a mouthful. I'll finish up the intro so you can catch your breath. Dr. Schlundt's paper was debated at the 2011 Focus on Prevention ISGP conference held in San Diego.
Sounds like we'll be talking about lots of things today. Disease surveillance, DNA sequencing, foodborne illness. Where do we start?
Well, let's start here. We've all heard of the flu. I mean, we've harped on the flu here on the forum for multiple episodes now. And then there are less well-known diseases, like Creutzfeldt-Jakob's disease. What do they have in common?
They both make me afraid to be a humble human in this pathogen-filled world.
Not what I was going for, but I guess I'll take it. But no, what they have in common is that they have both been implicated in human disease outbreaks, despite the fact that they stemmed from animals.
And to be honest, a lot of diseases that we face get their start in the animal world. But Dr. Schlundt provides us with a perhaps surprising fact. The greatest human disease burden caused by zoonotic or animal-originating diseases come from a small group of pathogens that cause foodborne illnesses.
These foodborne illness pathogens are sometimes referred to as endemic zoonotic diseases, which just means that they are constantly present in many populations of a specific animal.
Yeah, I was surprised to learn that thousands of people all around the world die each year because they've contracted some form or other of a foodborne illness.
That's true. The debaters acknowledge that mortality as well as morbidity associated with food-related illnesses causes world populations to incur tons of unnecessary healthcare costs.
You're not kidding about the costs thing. The 2011 Pew Charitable Trust report estimates that foodborne disease costs the United States alone about $152 billion each year.
To make matters worse, when these pathogens infect humans, we typically use antimicrobial agents to treat them. But the pathogens are developing resistance to these very antimicrobials at an astonishing rate.
Right. Because the antimicrobials are being used in the agricultural sphere to promote growth and prevent disease in animals.
This only makes the foodborne illness burden greater for the people that actually get sick. By the way, if you're interested in learning more about antibiotic resistance, we explain it further in episode 2 of the forum.
So, a problem in the food system has been that historically, it has inadequately addressed foodborne illnesses and their root causes. For instance, Dr. Schlunt cited a problem with only testing the end product and not having collaboration between different players in the food supply chain.
Hold up. Why is just testing the end product an ineffective solution to the problem? Actually, it seems like it'd be just the opposite, figuring out if something is wrong just before it reaches the consumer's stomach.
Well, if you're just testing for pathogens in the end product, it's kind of unrealistic to think that we'd ever be confident that the food is totally safe. That's because it's impractical to test enough of the end product food samples to be sure that safety is upheld.
End product testing, or monitoring of food during the processing stage, is definitely more common in the United States, while the European Union system focuses on implementing pathogen testing at the first stages of production.
Ah, okay. Actually, I noticed that the debaters felt more emphasis should be placed on microbiological data from the first stages of food production, like the farm. So we're trying in some ways to emulate the EU system.
Well, kind of. There was some concern that specific U.S. industries, take the poultry industry for instance, would be reluctant to cooperate with more stringent testing and reporting protocols.
Hold up, though. The poultry industry within certain European Union nations was instrumental in establishing the pathogen testing system that we'd be trying to emulate.
All right. Well, it might be necessary to offer direct industry incentives then, to make sure that the companies comply with the new standards that would make a new pathogen monitoring system truly effective.
We can't forget that there are inherent incentives for participating, though, namely keeping the people's faith in the food industry because they wouldn't get sick from their food quite as often.
I suppose that's true. Another area in which food safety could be improved is the current trend of testing for pathogens at the point of import, so when foods are crossing borders of some kind during transport.
How could testing at the point of import be improved?
By not existing.
Wait, what?
What I think Aubrey means is that testing at the point of production is more effective, both in terms of practicality and cost, than testing an 18-wheeler as it pulls into an unloading dock. No need to be so dramatic, Aubrey.
Ugh, sorry.
Anyway, the debaters mentioned that it might be a good idea to shift funding away from point of import food quality testing, and instead put that money towards point of production testing and data monitoring.
Cool. But there are still more problems with disease tracking in the food system, though. And you can't even call me dramatic this time, because Dr. Schlunt mentioned the disconnect between disease surveillance systems for animals and people slash their food. Based on our preface to this conversation, in which we explored the close link between animal and human disease, such a disconnect seems like a really bad idea.
Wait a second. So what you're saying is that incidents of salmonella can't be linked across animals, humans, and food?
Sounds like it. Which is astonishing since research shows that in places where disease tracking is integrated across these sectors, people have been better able to prevent and control the spread of disease.
That's true. It was discussed during the debate how Denmark has taken steps to better track where foodborne diseases are originating, at least with a handful of microbe types.
As a result, the country as a whole was able to reduce foodborne illnesses and associated deaths, plus healthcare costs.
But to backtrack to your earlier statement, Cleo, the example of Salmonella is kind of unique. This is because researchers have been trying to find ways to link specifically salmonella cases in animals and on foods to human incidents of the disease. This happens to be the work that occurred in Denmark, by the way.
That seems like it'd be helpful, since currently it's actually really difficult and almost rare to be able to link Salmonella cases in people with the root cause of the illness. As a matter of fact, this brings us back to Barb's case study from the beginning of our discussion.
Yeah, when I couldn't pinpoint the cause of my food poisoning incident.
Exactly. If you can't tell whether it was the pork, the chicken, or the eggs that gave you Salmonella, prevention efforts to stop the spread of disease might just be futile.
And that's exactly why scientists have developed a model, specifically one that estimates the number of human cases of Salmonella that can be attributed to each major source of an animal protein and other foods.
Not to mention that the model allows for a comparison of the Salmonella subtypes popping up in animals and foods versus humans. It relies on being able to test on the farm, aka the source, as well as in the hospital, aka the patient.
So we're not just talking about predictions anymore, but.
But real-life science, getting our hands dirty and seeing which human cases of Salmonella can be linked to Porky Pig, and which can be linked to, quick, give me a name of a famous chicken character.
Chicken Little.
Foghorn Leghorn.
Colonel Sanders.
Not a chicken.
Whatever, you get the point.
Well then, as it stands, this Salmonella tracking model has been used as a decision-making tool when trying to prevent and control outbreaks of the disease.
And that's all well and good, but the model only applies to Salmonella. We all know there are plenty more diseases where that comes from.
So, why not make similar models for a wide variety of foodborne pathogens?
Well, one of the reasons the model was made for Salmonella is because the way this disease works facilitates these kinds of predictions. In other words, the epidemiology of this disease and our ability to detect and identify its subtypes makes it possible to perform these analyses. We can't do all our fancy schmancy detecting with many other pathogens that exist. Not at present, anyway.
But our ability to sequence the genomes or DNA content of a pathogen is being enhanced. Basically, it's becoming possible to sequence an entire bacterial genome in minutes, which should definitely help us identify and track foodborne disease culprits.
I mean, it won't be easy to store, analyze, and interpret thousands of samples of DNA data in an efficient, organized way, but it'll definitely be something.
Dr. Schlund thought that this rapid sequencing ability would allow us to create a global database of bacterial strains that could be shared among countries. In this case, he'd like to see this database take the form of real-time reporting of microbiological data and outbreak incidents, but it also needs to incorporate antimicrobial resistance information.
To be effective, such a database must link animal and food-based sources of infection to human outbreaks.
Who would import information into the database? Well, that depends, really. It wouldn't be hard to imagine individual researchers or quality testing organizations updating the info.
But the debaters also mentioned that collaborative consortia could be established internationally, comprised of research teams that would work together to create more thorough genetic sequence banks.
True. It was noted that such a consortium has been successfully created in the past. But its goal was to map the human microbiome. Nonetheless, the effort spanned multiple continents and over 10 constituent organizations, so it can be done.
Even if we could make such a database, though, it would truly be a massive system, and it might be necessary to first develop the capacity to house and use such large quantities of data over the internet.
Large or not, a database that tracks disease incidents in animals, plus contamination in food sources, as well as food-related illnesses in humans, is a prime example of a concept that we've chatted about in previous episodes, a One Health approach.
Such an approach to health protection and disease prevention seeks to consider relevant information from as many fields as possible when analyzing health risks. Veterinary and plant pathogen info are two examples.
With a One Health type database, we'd be able to track bacterial disease spread and then ideally prevent it from traveling further.
Not so fast, though, because challenges that would come with the territory include agreeing globally on a sequencing technique, how to transmit the data, and where the data would be stored.
Not to mention teasing out who governs the database. Should it be an existing organization or a brand new one established for this purpose? Plus, I'm sure different countries have different constraints regarding what information they can and cannot share, so that could be a major challenge to overcome.
Yeah, if we want the database to be transparent and really inclusive, it might be difficult to get all nations to sign on.
But there will undoubtedly be benefits for all countries involved, especially less affluent nations. The training and new infrastructure that would come along with establishing such a system would let them better keep track of their own foodborne disease risk at home, rather than relying on wealthier countries to tell them what to look out for.
Although, bearing in mind the fact that we want wealthy and less wealthy nations involved in the effort collectively, whatever system is established will have to be strategically tiered so that the differing technological capacities of all the countries are accommodated.
Well, if we could figure all that out, and if the political will could be garnered for this sort of international database, the debaters thought it could be created within just 10 years.
And recall that this particular debate occurred in 2011. We should mention that there have been some significant advances in the One Health and disease tracking fields. And some of these technological advances will even be appearing in the next year or so.
So the fact that new disease tracking options are being developed really demonstrates the need for such systems. It's being recognized by the professionals, which is exciting in my opinion.
That's true. We're talking about more holistic approaches to disease, including foodborne illness.
Specifically, a holistic approach to food safety testing throughout the food supply chain, and not just end product testing, is colloquially known as the farm-to-table approach. Basically, this means that we're concerned with safety risk throughout the food chain spectrum, from production to consumption.
So, if you've been paying close attention, we've been chatting about two different types of pathogen reporting systems today. One would be for international tracking of disease, and the other would be to enhance communication between all players in the food system from farm to table.
I'd say that's a decent summary.
But you know, it seems like the debaters think these systems could be one and the same. At least, they noted that the international disease tracking system would have to include industry participation to be effective.
Sounds like the two systems could definitely be related, then.
Heck, while we're at it, why limit the international microbe reporting database to foodborne pathogens? Why not include other microbes as well?
Not a bad idea. The debaters thought that if we included all kinds of microbes in the database, it could become an absolutely invaluable tool for the medical community in terms of diagnosing and treating disease, foodborne or otherwise.
Hey, did you guys know that when I first started working with the Institute on Science for Global Policy, I read the book from this Focus on Prevention conference, and reading it led me to work with a small team of students to write out a strategic plan for the development of this sort of database?
No, not at all. Was your plan for all pathogens, or was it foodborne disease specific?
It's actually for all pathogens, with a focus on infectious disease. It's called Globalized Ethics for Medical Science, or GEMS for short.
It is? As in present tense? As in the database exists?
Well, it's actually in development. Our team has grown, which I think is indicative of people agreeing with Dr. Schlent that there's a need for global disease tracking systems.
I think you're right about that. The debaters actually mentioned that when it comes to disease, especially in regards to foodborne illnesses, countries must cooperate with one another to report successes and failures of prevention and control efforts.
It would really be for the common good, so that mistakes could be avoided and good outcomes could be emulated.
Sounds pretty darn reasonable.
But not without its challenges.
Naturally.
Well, I think that just about wraps up our discussion for today, don't you think?
Yep, I'd say so. Time to ask our listeners to weigh in. Do you think that we need to be paying closer attention to foodborne disease?
And would an international system of disease reporting be beneficial? And an even better question, who should establish the system? An existing group like the World Health Organization, or a brand new entity created for the sole purpose of establishing and regulating the hypothetical system?
Tweet us your thoughts at ISGP Forum using the hashtag ISGP Forum. We're looking forward to hearing what you have to say.
And if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to circle back to episode 14 of the Forum called To Catch a Pathogen, because it came from the same conference we chatted about today.
Great point, Cleo. Well, that just about does it for us. Hope you enjoyed the show today, and we'll catch you next time right here on the Forum.
The Institute on Science for Global Policy, or ISGP, is a nonprofit organization that convenes international meetings bringing together scientists, policymakers, industry leaders, students, and other stakeholders to discuss pertinent scientific issues facing society. The ISGP has no opinions and does not lobby. Therefore, the preceding podcast reflects the views expressed by the presenters and debaters at our conference. For more information, please visit our website at www.scienceforglobalpolicy.org. Thank you.